Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Christopher, as the promo says, let's go.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I am here with you until 10 o'clock. We've got a little bit of show to do tonight, and there is some news that is going on in Chicago sports. Glad that you are along for the ride. Sorry that you had to wait.
Bears All Access was pretty good, though. The Illini game stunk in the last 10 minutes, but Bears All Access with Zach Miller was pretty entertaining. The crew, Herb Lawrence is the executive producer of the show. Christopher Dickens is in charge of sound. We got you until 10 o'clock. Here's what we have in store for you. Anthony Heron will make his usual Tuesday appearance, and since we got a late start, he'll join me in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm looking forward to talking with him, considering some of the news of the day. I'm going to talk with Robert Mays of The Ringer. We'll do that around 7:40. If you haven't checked out what Robert Mays does, he's really good. He's a really good writer. He's a Chicago dude. And I think you'll find him interesting. We got a lot to talk about. And at some point, we'll check in with somebody about the news of the day when it comes to the Cubs. If you are getting in your car or sitting down to work or just flipping back on the station, Jim Hickey has decided that he's going to step down because of personal reasons. This from ChicagoCubs.com and Jordan Bastian. There had been speculation for weeks that Jim Hickey, Cubs manager Joe Maddon's longtime pitching coach, might not be back on the north side next season. Those rumblings became reality on Tuesday when Chicago provided some clarity about a coaching staff in flux. The Cubs announced that Hickey informed the team on Monday of his decision to step down as the club's pitching coach due to unspecified personal reasons. Chicago's search for a replacement, as well as for a new assistant hitting coach, is underway. Quote, we thank Jim for his season with the Cubs and his positive impact on our pitchers. Jim has our full support and we wish him well. Close quote. That is from Cubs president of baseball operations, Theo Epstein. So now you're kind of up to date on what's going on with the Cubs. So they are making pretty much wholesale changes to their coaching staff. This one necessitated by personal issues, and I don't know if we even need to get into Jim Hickey's business. Just wish him well and hope that whatever it is that's going on ends up getting better. But for the Cubs, this is what I thought that this would be an interesting offseason for them, and so far it has been. Now, I thought that the interest in this offseason would come from the fact that maybe we would see them make a splash in free agency, and I'm feeling that's less and less of a possibility, but maybe they're just being coy and they're playing possum, and then all of a sudden they end up with Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. But it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like momentum is working that way. And now you have Jim Hickey, who is walking away, and so the Cubs will now hire. So if I have this right, their third hitting coach and third pitching coach in as many years, right? That's a lot of turnover, and we'll see. We'll see if the pitching coach that they end up bringing in is someone who believes in the philosophies of Joe Maddon or the organization or both. And I think that there's still a lot of work to do on the pitching staff. You got to figure a ton of things out. You got to figure out, is Yu Darvish going to be a part of it? And how soon? Is Tyler Chatwood a starter? Would you happen to have anyone who might be willing to trade for him? I don't think that's the case, but whatever. So there's a lot to discuss on that front. And if you want to jump in and talk about it, you are more than welcome to. 312-644-6767. You can also text us at 67011. The other news today is that Mitchell Trubisky is hurt. The extent of how hurt he is, nobody knows, but Matt Nagy said today he is in pain. And the way he was talking at the press conference could lead one to believe that Mitch is not going to play on Thursday. He was talking about how they're going to treat Mitch the way that they treated Khalil Mack and Allen Robinson. And in both of those cases, you had those guys sit out games to get them ready for other games. It's a quick turnaround. It looks like from the videos and the angles that I saw that on that scramble where Harrison Smith hits Mitch late, that Mitch went to brace himself on his tumble, because I'm not going to call it a slide, on his tumble with his throwing arm. Harrison Smith comes in, caught in between, hits him late, and hits him in the left shoulder. And maybe the impact of that hit pushes down on the shoulder, and that's how you get the injury. I kept wondering if maybe that comes from, remember the play where Mitch missed an open receiver? And you're like, how did he miss him? And then you see the replay and saw that someone hit him on his throwing shoulder as he was throwing. I don't know if that's it, if that's the thing, and then the tumble re-aggravated it and the hit compounded it. I don't know. But the way that Matt Nagy was talking today, it felt as if they were at least prepping for the possibility that Chase Daniel will play on Thursday. Christopher, I should have asked you this a long time ago. How long is Matt Nagy today? Do we have the chunk of him talking about Mitch? Because I do want to let people hear it. The other part of that is I'm not sure if it's gamesmanship or not. Like, I'm not sure if what Nagy's doing is, yeah, Mitch wouldn't have practiced if they would have had practice yesterday, but they didn't have practice yesterday because it's a short week and a quick turnaround. But you do have to put out an injury report regardless. And they said if it would have been a practice yesterday, he would not have been on it. He would not have participated in practice. But I wonder if there is some gamesmanship that's going on here. And even if he isn't going to play, you make Detroit think that he might play, then they have to prepare for what I think is two different quarterbacks. Yes, Chase Daniel is familiar with the system. He understood it in Kansas City, like all that good stuff. But he's not the athlete that Mitch is. Now, that might, there are some people who will tell you, well, he knows the system, so he might be able to exploit it better than Mitch from a passing standpoint. And I'm not as confident in that. If Chase Daniel does play, to me, the strength of the Bears is their roster is now better than the Lions. It's significantly better. So they should win on talent alone, no matter who's quarterbacking the team. But it is the NFL. You do have a Lions team that jumped up and beat the Patriots a few weeks ago. You have a Lions team that beat Carolina. Riverboat Ron out there gambling. It's the one, like, I love the guts of that move, but it's the one time where you go, well, you're the better team, so extending the game is probably the better idea. Because you're thinking at some point Matthew Stafford is going to give you one. So do we have the Nagy? How long is it, Christopher?
Nagy spoke for 15 minutes today. I've got a couple chunks on Mitch and when he says the injury happened and exactly what he feels the injury is going to entail.
All right, let's run those. We don't need to run all 15 minutes because the most important part of Nagy's press conference was him talking about Mitch. Here's what the head coach had to say about the injuries.
I'm saying cautiously optimistic, but I can't make any promises. I hope he does, but it's at a day-to-day thing for us. Like I said, it's literally he wants to play. I know that. And for us, but we gotta make sure in these situations that we're doing the right thing. So that is why, regardless of whatever decision is made or wherever we're at on game day, I think this goes back to with Ryan and his guys making sure that throughout this roster we have depth and we feel comfortable. And so if it's something where Chase ends up playing, then that's the way it goes, and we keep moving forward. That's just part of where we're at right now. The fact that you don't have more time can affect it a little bit, but again, every injury is a little bit different. So I'm just going to rely on our training staff and on Mitch. I'm not going to get into the actual details of everything with his shoulder. We've done our testing on it and we know exactly where he's at but respect to us and the player and where we're at. I'm not going to get into the details of it. No, for us, I mean, we're at a point right now where we're going through all that literally on a day-to-day type deal, but we feel very confident it's not.
Okay, so they're saying that they don't think that he'll need surgery, but obviously NFL teams are not going to really tell you the extent of an injury on a player, especially a player that's as important as Mitchell Trubisky. The short week catches the Bears with some injury concerns. You have Mitchell, the most important one, but Aaron Lynch and Adam Shaheen are in the concussion protocol, and ordinarily, guys don't get cleared that quickly. Ordinarily. So what I'm looking forward to tomorrow as the Bears travel to Detroit, because the rule is you have to be in town 24 hours before kickoff, do they make any roster moves? And they might wait until Thursday, too. Like, you'll wait till Thursday morning. If Tyler Bray is elevated to the active roster, it kind of gives you a hint of what's going on. Because I can't imagine that if Mitch doesn't start, he'll be in uniform. Now, it's possible they could, you know, Mitch might be good enough if some sort of emergency rises that he could go out there and play. But if he were good enough to go, you would probably just start him, you know, instead of, but we'll see. We'll see what they end up doing. But it's not great. It's not great. Texters are pointing out, and we appreciate it. And again, if you want to jump in, 312-644-6767 is the number. You can also text us, 670-11. Mitch is an awkward runner. And I take that back. He's not an awkward runner. He runs well. He's an awkward slider. And that's why, you know, someone said, well, you know, that hit was dirty. The Harrison Smith hit wasn't dirty. It was illegal, but it wasn't dirty. There's a difference. But Mitch can put a defender in that position because he's an awkward slider. Like, it's not just the slide. It's kind of I might be able to get an extra yard. I'm going to get down. It would frustrate the hell out of me if I was a defensive player. And if another quarterback had done that and Eddie Jackson was the guy that was coming downhill on that particular play, you'd been like, man, that's a rough spot for the defender to be in. Yeah. Now, there's advantages to that. We see Mitch make plays with his feet. What, is this the Nagy on him sliding? Yeah. Nagy thinks he's a great slider. I disagree with the head coach.
He's good at it. Now, because he's running more often than others, there's different times that he slides and different ways that he slides. I've been around some bad sliders, including Michael Vick, and he'd laugh at it. He couldn't slide to save his life. I mean, we used to go out and jump on the – we used to put the slip and slide out after practice and try to teach him to jump. He couldn't do it. But then you got these baseball players that have played baseball in high school that know how to do it. Mitch knows how to do it. He knows how to slide. And so it's sometimes you'll see him slide certain ways because of angles of where you're at on the field and when you're trying to get down or not get down. And, again, it comes with the territory.
Okay. He's out there tumbling. But that's okay. He's a tough dude that's trying to get extra yards. So I'm not mad at Mitch at all for trying to get extra yards, but considering how important he is to the franchise, someone might want to teach the young man how to slide properly. And it's so weird. Like Sunday night when we were watching the game over at NBC Sports Chicago, Lance and Alex were talking about that. They're like, you know, one of these days, Mitch is going to take a hit. And he took the hit. Now, the hit was illegal. It was late and it got flagged. But he could slide better. How about that? Because I know they're the people that will defend Mitch no matter what. He could do a better job of sliding. 630 Texter says, I would say Mitch is an unorthodox runner. I don't know about that. I mean, I am a little fascinated by the way he runs because it's not like he takes off and then he's just like, I'm going to get these 7 yards and get out of bounds or take on this hit. He is like head on a swivel, like running across the middle of the field. So I guess in that way, you're probably right. He is a little bit of an unorthodox runner in that regard. But I look at it as it's a guy that's trying to make a play, but teach him how to slide because your future is depending on it. I know that there are some people that are licking their chops at the idea of, yeah, Chase Daniel, this is what I wanted to see. I am not one of those people. Herbie, what are the numbers on Chase Daniel? Is it 51 of 78 in his career? Is that right?
I have to research again. It wasn't good.
I mean, it's fine.
It wasn't a lot either.
Yeah, there's not a lot there. So it's hard for me to get excited about a guy who has made a living by being smart and being the backup. And props to him.
Chase Daniel, singular, 51 of 78.
So props to him on that, because he has finessed the NFL out of a lot of money. A lot. So I give him credit. 630 Texas, he just looks different when he's running compared to other quarterbacks. Well, I think he looks better than most quarterbacks running because he can run. It is a compact style, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like Cam Newton is a long strider because he's this giant guy. He's also, you know, the size of a defensive end. But even Cam, like you see now, he's a little bit more respectful on when he decides to slide and when he decides to run. There were some plays on the goal line in that game where I was sitting there going, oh, this is the part where Cam Newton runs. And he didn't run. Even on the 2-point conversion that they missed, I was sitting there going, isn't this when Cam usually takes off and Supermans his way into the end zone? And he's like, nah, I'm going to throw this pass like way high and behind my receiver and we're going to lose. Which is great. This texter says, your narrative on the Bears the last 18 months has been so wrong and negative. I was wrong that they should fire John Fox? Huh. So they should have kept John Fox according to your text. Got it. 219 texter. Mitch sometimes looks like he gets ahead of himself and his feet can't catch up, so he tumbles forward, like the Miami game. I agree with you. I think that he is one of those dudes that is surveying the field as he's running. And he's like, and it's been big. Like there's been those plays that looks like he's caught and he's turned them into 40-yard gains or touchdowns. Did he have one against the Patriots? Did he have a big? I can't remember. They're all starting to blur together now. But I feel like there was maybe it was the game before that, but I felt like there was a run that he had against the Patriots where it was like, don't run, Mitch, don't. Oh, run, Mitch, run. And then he ends up in the end zone. But to get back to the main point, if Chase Daniel plays, like I would still favor the Bears because their defense is incredible. I think this is actually like focus. If it's Chase Daniel, the opportunity for letdown is less because I think those guys will be heightened to try to make sure that everything goes according to plan. But if you have Khalil Mack on your side, whom shall you fear? If you've got Akeem Hicks on your side collapsing the middle of the pocket, and Matthew Stafford is there not being as mobile as he once was, and it doesn't look like Kerryon Johnson is going to play. 815 texter, Mitch really looks like a young Michael Vick running. No, he does not. That is, he doesn't look like Michael Vick. And here's the other end of that spectrum. 708 texter, Mitch runs like Tebow. I think that's closer to being accurate than he runs like Michael Vick. I think Michael Vick had the I'm going to run away from you thing and had that speed. I think Mitch is kind of caught in between. So maybe he's a combination of both.
He's sneaky athletic.
I'm not saying that. He's just athletic. I see what you did there, though.
Mitch is more of a cerebral runner, I think. I think he kind of knows.
Is he a gym rat too?
Yeah.
You know, he's first in, last one out.
Coach's son, all those things. That he's a cerebral runner.
Yeah.
Is that what we're calling him?
That's what we're calling him.
Okay. Yeah.
You heard it here first. Coined it.
Okay. Michael Vick, not a cerebral runner.
No, you just said he runs away from people. That's more of a reaction than.
How about Cam Newton?
Same.
Cam Newton's just a beast.
Just a beast. So not. He is also not a. This is good. Mitch runs like Luck. That's a good call. Luck's a little bit bigger, but you're right. It's not, I'm not trying to diss Mitch. It's not like fluid, but it's effective. And like you'd see Andrew Luck like run down the field. By the way, shout out to them, the Colts, for protecting Andrew Luck. Look what happens when you protect him. I think he's only been sacked 10 times this season. And when you protect him, he's on pace to like throw for 4,500 yards. Now we're just getting ridiculous. Mitch runs like Bobby Boucher. I don't know about that. 815 text says, the Lions are one-dimensional going in, right? Yeah, Kerryon Johnson being injured is a thing. But if there's one quarterback in the league, well, two. If there's one quarterback in the league that understands how to play with no run game, it's Matthew Stafford. And to tell you the truth, he's probably more comfortable slinging the ball 55 times anyway. The other guy would be Phillip Rivers, but they got a run game now. We're going to take a break. When we come back, our guest, you really need to hear him. Robert Mays, he has written some incredible stuff about the Bears. He covers the NFL nationally for The Ringer, and he's also done some cool stuff about the offense that the Bears is running. That the Bears are running, the Bears is running, that the Bears are running, and I want you to hear that. So we're going to talk with him next. Stick around. We got some great, sexy football talk next on The Score. A news-filled day here on The Score as we've been talking about Mitchell Trubisky and the possibility that he might not start on Thursday against Detroit. I ran across this guy's work, and I feel bad because I should have run across it earlier. I ran across this guy's work on our buddy Matt Collar's podcast, and I said, oh, he's talking about the Metro and stuff. He's from Chicago. So I thought I would extend an olive branch and get Robert Mays on the show. You should check him out. He writes for The Ringer. It's really good stuff. The stuff that he did about the jet sweep, I want to get to, and he just recently wrote a piece about the Khalil Mack trade. You can follow him on Twitter at Robert Mays, and he joins me now here on The Score. Robert, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Anything for hometown radio. I grew up listening to The Score. I'm always happy to do it.
All right, great. Well, good. Hopefully that we can make it so that you're a more regular contributor because your stuff is incredible. I do want to talk about the jet sweep piece, but the piece that you wrote on Khalil Mack, saying that it swung the balance of power in the NFC North. I went through the piece, but for people who didn't read it, why did you make that strong statement that was the difference?
I mean, I think that if you look at the way the division's gone so far, and especially the game that happened on Sunday night, the Bears' defense has maybe been the most important entity in the entire division. And I feel like the Bears' defense was unlocked in large part because of the Khalil Mack trade. And it's not about one player, but when you consider what he's done for everyone else, and it's not just when he's getting strip sacks or causing fumbles or getting quarterback hits or anything. You watch that Minnesota game, just the clock in Kirk Cousins' head and how much faster it is because Khalil Mack is there. And that leads to that Adrian Amos interception. It almost leads to a Bryce Callahan interception where Mack actually gets to him in the first quarter. And the way that he allows single teams to happen along, he gets double teamed so often. People slide protection to him so often. You're getting Leonard Floyd and Akeem Hicks being able to run games on the other side without much resistance. You're getting Akeem Hicks single blocked. Guys on the back end have been able to play so much faster and with so much more tenacity and certainty and assertiveness because they know the ball is coming out so quickly. I mean, Eddie Jackson has had a phenomenal season, but Eddie Jackson doesn't have that season if the Bears' pass rush isn't what it is. I mean, they controlled that game. I know that the Minnesota scored 20 points or whatever, but I was there. They did nothing. I mean, the Bears owned them. And if you consider just how much that defense has influenced the Bears' season, the Bears' run to 7-3 and everything else, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a trade that's been more impactful since the Patriots dealt for Randy Moss 11 years ago.
Let's talk about the news that's been kind of going around today. And, I want to spend some time talking about Khalil Mack because I love watching him play. But if Mitchell Trubisky got hurt, you know, the Bears think that it happened, or at least they're saying that it happened on the Harrison Smith hit, even though Harrison Smith hit Mitch in the left shoulder and not the right shoulder. But let's say that he doesn't play on Thursday, which I think could make some sense. This offense and the system that it runs really well. Can it run well without Mitchell Trubisky being the guy?
No, I don't think so. I feel like it would have to be drastically different. If you look at what Chase Daniel has done for a majority of his career, it's been so dink and dunk. And one of the reasons that the Bears have been able to be successful is that Mitchell Trubisky has no reservations about chucking it downfield. He has one of the highest percentages in the league of downfield throws. And just the threat of that type of play kind of unleashes the rest of your offense to create space. It allows guys like Tariq Cohen and Trey Burton to really take advantage of, you know, what a defense is allowed to do if you have guys like Taylor Gabriel taking the top off. So if that threat isn't there with Chase Daniel, if the defense doesn't believe that he's able to really hurt them over the top, everything else that you can do. So I feel like they'd be hard-pressed, even against a team like Detroit, to move it that well when Chase Daniel's in the game. And a couple weeks ago, I would have said, just run it. Just run it 50 times against the Lions because they can't stop anybody. Harrison that they made a few weeks ago has really helped the run defense. I mean, he's arguably, over the last 5 years, be the best run defender in the entire NFL. So it takes away your options. And I just think that part of me wants to say, even if he can't throw, just put him in there and run it 60 times. It's all read option plays. I honestly believe that might be a better offensive approach than having Chase Daniel play.
Well, I keep wondering, because of the things that Mitch can do with his feet, if you're really diminished as an offense because Chase Daniel can't do that at the same level.
Oh, I absolutely think you are. I mean, the amount of times on Sunday that Trubisky was able to extend plays and avoid Danielle Hunter and really mitigate some of the problems that the Bears have had along their offensive line at points this season. They've been good for the most part, but he's really gotten out of some stuff. He wiggles. And Chase Daniel has, I guess when he was at Missouri and I was there, he had some subtle athleticism. I'm not sure if 12 years later he's moving quite as well. I know I'm not. Maybe that's unfair to put on him.
For sure. He's only 51 completions, right, in his entire career. It's hard to even scout Chase Daniel other than to say he has finessed the league for millions and millions of dollars.
You know what? Good for him. As a fellow
Agreed.
Missouri boy, I wish the best for him. It's a good gig if you can get it, man. I mean, if you don't have to play and they're giving you $3-4 million just to hang out and be a mentor to guys trying to learn the offense, I wish I could convince somebody that I was an expert at what Matt Nagy and Andy Reid try to do.
Well, you watched the game last night. The Chiefs and Rams went up and down the field. It was basketball on grass last night. People in Chicago are really excited about what this offense looks like under Nagy. Why are we seeing a rise in effectiveness of these systems?
I think it's a combination of things. I feel like the rules have certainly helped. I mean, you watch those first couple drives and what the Chiefs were trying to do to the Rams, they just won't let you do that anymore. The game has opened up because of just the way the rules work. And then that's compounded by the way these offenses work. Both the Chiefs and the Rams do such an incredible job of using every inch of the field, horizontally and vertically. And that jet sweep story you were talking about earlier, both those teams are at the top of the league in how often they use jet motion. And just the stress that puts on defenses. There's a play in the first quarter that I feel like it completely encapsulates why the Rams are good. And it was a play-action pass, Robert Woods coming right to left. Brandon Cooks lined up on the left side, Woods lined up on the right side. And Cooks ran this deep corner to the left side, and then Woods runs this really big over route from right to left. They love that play. And the key part of that play, though, is that Gurley leaks out into the flat all the way to the sideline, and it holds that corner. And when you watch Goff throw that ball, there's 30 yards of open space. It's just so easy of a completion. And while the rules help these offenses, I also think the rise of these sorts of head coach play callers that really define the identity and the DNA of who their team is has started to take hold. And Matt Nagy's in that same mold. So I really do believe we're going to see more and more teams try to replicate this, where you're taking guys from that Reed system, from maybe the McVay-Shanahan system, and empowering them to be head coaches just because it seems like it's working in so many ways.
Talking with Robert Mays of The Ringer, he covers the NFL for them. Your column on the jet sweep got used in a conversation that we were having here on The Score about these offenses in particular and how do you stop them. I'm a big fan of the book Blood, Sweat, and Chalk. And basically in that book, it kind of illustrates, well, here's an innovation by the offense, and here's the natural, you know, pushback from the defense. Well, here's the West Coast. Well, here's cover two. You know, so I'm trying to figure out, and no one's been able to give me a good answer on this. So if you can't give me one, that's fine. What is the next thing that the defense can try to do to slow this down?
I really don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, if you want an answer to that, I know Doug Farrar from Bleacher, he's at USA Today now, has written extensively on it. He did a series on it last week that I actually haven't gotten to yet. I'm sure it's fantastic. But he tried to explore that idea. I don't know. I mean, if I knew, I would probably be a defensive coordinator in the NFL. There are just so many concepts teams are using that are so difficult to defend, and they're using them to a degree we've never seen before, so it's hard to decipher what the answer is. I mean, the Rams are using play action on 38% of their dropbacks. That's absurd. I mean, that's at the extreme end that we never thought we'd ever come across. 2 years ago, the Falcons led the league at 25%. That's a sea change. That is progress at an exponential rate. And then you look at things like the jet sweep. The story that I did, I talked to the guy who really originated using it as the foundation of his offense. His name is Bob Stitt at the Colorado School of Mines. He's an analyst at Oklahoma State now. And I asked him, I said, you know, what do defenses do? What's the natural reaction? He goes, they can't. They still haven't figured it out. And that's the crazy part about it, is that some of these things, there is no answer. And just with the way the rules have changed, with how fast offenses have embraced college concepts, with how much the game has spread out, I'm not sure if we're ever going to go back to a more defensive-minded style of football. I think that this is here to stay, and whether or not defenses can do anything to mitigate it, the answer is probably yes, but the answers aren't apparent.
In reading that piece, when you're talking about the one back clinic, I'm sitting there thinking offensive guys are framed as creatives. It's weird that outside of a few defensive guys, that as a group, they're not really seen as creatives. Why is that?
I really don't know. I think that in a way, we kind of demonize that mastermind defensive coordinator. We almost use it as a pejorative term. Mm. You know, with Rex Ryan, it kind of came that way. And it's like, oh, it's too complicated. And in a lot of ways, a lot of the successful defenses we've seen over the last, you know, 20 years or so in the league, a vast majority of them have been simple systems run well. I mean, you look at what Seattle did with that cover three and, you know, that kind of modified man cover stuff they used to do with the Legion of Boom. You think about what Monty Kiffin's cover two was. One of the only defenses that really was super complex in how they would blitz and the guys they would send and everything else was Pittsburgh. that zone fire scheme, fire zone scheme that Dick LeBeau used to run. Belichick is very complex, but it doesn't look complex. They give it that same stylistic quality that we would give to a Rex Ryan or Dick LeBeau defense. You know, the coverage and pattern matching and the different one and two gapping things that the Patriots have always done, that stuff is crazy complex, but they don't blitz. You know, they don't have all of these guys running up to the line of scrimmage and running back. It doesn't look like the Vikings defense last year. It looks very different. So we don't ascribe the same level of creativity and ingenuity to it, but it is. And I think Belichick may be the only guy consistently over the last two decades or so where we've said that guy is a genius, and we haven't necessarily meant it as maybe he's outsmarting himself.
The guy that you brought up, Dick LeBeau, like my solution to this evolution is spread, which by the way, it's not just an evolution. I mean, you've got them looking backwards. You've got Matt Nagy running wing T concepts and stuff.
Yep.
So my primitive solution is get Dick LeBeau in a room, pay Dick LeBeau a whole lot of money, and say, I don't care how crazy your ideas are. I want to hear every one of them. You draw them up, and as long as they are within the rules of the game, I am interested in what you have to say on how we might be able to slow this down.
I think that one element you're going to see a lot of, and I think one, especially against the Jets sweep, what teams started to do is they would just blitz. They would just blitz. They would, and RPOs as well. They started sending free runners as often as they could. And you saw what the Chiefs did yesterday. Obviously, it didn't work until the Rams scored 51 points, but two of those were defensive touchdowns. They got 21 points off turnovers. Now, that was a game where the Chiefs' defense probably did as well as it could have against that Rams team. And with all this stuff where they're play action fakes, meshes, the plays are a little bit slow developing, I feel like we're going to see more and more teams send a ton of pressure. And you saw opposite approaches last night. They're different offenses, of course, but you saw very opposite approaches. Today, he said the Rams played cover zero the entire game against us and didn't blitz. They just wanted to sit back. The Chiefs wanted to do the opposite. And the results were kind of similar. So that's what we're saying, is there a right answer or not? When you see two approaches on vastly different ends of the spectrum and they get the same results, there probably isn't a definitive right answer.
Okay, let me go back to the Bears before we close down this conversation. I'm pretty sure that Khalil Mack was born of Krypton. And here's my proof, Robert. Khalil sounds like Kal-El, which is Superman's real name. So I think I have cracked the code on that. But what makes him such a special player?
I think it's just the conversion of speed to power that he does. I posted a clip of him in the column I write every Monday afternoon. It was online. I can't remember exactly what the source was. But it was the angle of him just throwing Riley Reiff to the ground with one arm. And people are like, oh, he did it with one arm. But he does that all the time. That's his move. Because he's so explosive off the edge, tackles really have to account for cutting off that angle to the quarterback. They have to make sure he can't go around them outside. And as they do that, as they take these big vertical sets, Khalil Mack is more than happy to put his foot in the ground and run you over. And the way that he does that is he uses one single arm to do it. And just think about this physically. If you lean forward with two arms, you don't move as far forward as you do with one arm. So just the physics of it all, he's able to get extension with that single arm, and the guy, the offensive lineman, trying to block him with two hands can't touch him. So it's just the perfect thing that he's been able to master, and he times it so well. If you watch that clip in my column, Reef's right foot is off the ground when Mack hits it. He just knows when to hit the move and when to make guys just completely vulnerable. So it's a combination of stuff. It's physical gifts. It's tape study and understanding exactly what the timing on that set is, and it's just instinct in knowing exactly when to translate that speed to power move. And it makes him pretty much unstoppable if you don't try to block him with at least two guys.
Well, if this Mitch injury is not serious, and there aren't any indications that it is, at least yet, to me it seems pretty assured that they're going to win the division. I mean, they've got a game and a half lead. Sure, there's still six games to go, but they've got a pretty steady lead. I'm wondering, how far do you think this team could go, or was the convergence of the Mac deal, the injuries around the division, and Kirk Cousins not being as good as the Vikings thought,
just a gift, and Bears fans should be happy with them just winning the division.
I feel like what happens against the Rams is going to be a fascinating case study. Because when you watch what happened last night, you can definitely come to a conclusion to at least a certain degree that defenses don't matter anymore. I'm not of that opinion. We saw three defensive touchdowns yesterday. I think that defenses matter in big game-swinging plays, even if you can't necessarily stop an offense three times in a row when they're trying to get 10 yards anymore. So the Bears against the Rams is kind of, it's testing circumstances. You know, you have a control of whether or not a defense in the modern NFL can actually matter. And I don't know the answer to that. And I think we're going to find out a lot about it on December 9th. And if the conclusion we draw from that game is yes, it does, then why can't the Bears be this year's Jaguars? Their defense, in my opinion, is just as good and just as spotless. They have no weaknesses the same way the Jags did last year. The run defense is better, and their offense is considerably better. The quarterback, in my opinion, is better, and his advantage over Bortles is enough. The pass catchers are a ton better than what the Jags had last year, and they have an actual offensive-minded head coach who knows what he's doing. If the defense matters to a degree, then I feel like they could have a similar impact. And maybe I'm just being a homer and maybe I'm being biased. But if they can do something against the Rams, and if they can go touchdown for touchdown to a certain degree while also getting some stops and some huge game-swinging plays, I feel like they could be a quiet contender.
What's the team that you haven't seen in person that you want to go see in person?
Yeah, I saw the Rams play the Vikings this year, and I was very impressed by them, but I have not seen the Chiefs. I don't go to many games just because I have to write about the whole league on Monday, so I can really only go to night games, and that's why I was at the game last week, just because it was so easy. But the Chiefs are a team I'm excited to see, and come playoff time, I guarantee you I will.
Robert, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you for being on the show. Since you're local, I got to get you in studio, and we can just sit down and talk about football.
I'm down, man, whenever you want.
That is Robert Mays of The Ringer. He is great. You hear me talk all the time about sexy football. This guy writes about sexy football. Make sure you check out his stuff. The piece on Khalil Mack is great. I want you to go back and check out the piece that he wrote on the jet sweep. It is fascinating and gives you a real window into the minds of these offensive guys, including the one that is coaching your team right now. We'll take a break. We'll reset. We'll talk a little bit about the Jim Hickey news. If you hadn't heard, he has stepped down. He is no longer the pitching coach of your Chicago Cubs. We'll do that coming up next here on The Score.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High hopes. Streaming on Hulu.